Good morning. Thank you for being here. This meeting is being webcasted and recorded, so all participants, please speak clearly. Members of the public who wish to observe or to address the board may join the meeting at the notice physical location or may use the Zoom application to address the board from a remote location. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available at www.cal-span.org. In addition, we're receiving presentations and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform. If you intend to present or comment or think you might be interested in commenting, you should already be in the Zoom meeting room using the meeting ID and the password you received from the clerk. If you've not already received the meeting ID and the password, you can go to our website at www.waterboards.ca.gov/North Coast. Click on the June 12th through 13th, 2025 board meeting button and follow the instructions to complete a virtual speaker card. You will then receive an email from the clerk with the Zoom login information. For anyone here in the meeting room that wishes to address the board, please complete a speaker card available on the tables outside the boardroom and give it to the clerk. For those in the Zoom meeting, your camera will be turned off and you will be on mute until it is your turn to speak. The clerk will unmute you when it is your turn to address the board. We will call each commenter by name and then unmute each commenter. I would also like to ask those who have provided a contact name to please state your name for the record before you speak. There's a normal 5-minute time limit for each commenter. During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen. For those calling in by phone, we will run the timer and let you know when you have 30 seconds left or when your time is up. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are called upon during public comment. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute. You can remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of your item, and then you may choose to leave or to exit the meeting or continue. Now, if you would please join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all. Thank you. We will do the roll call now. From my left.
Ryan Sundberg, McKinleyville.
Good morning, everyone. Greg Giusti, Ukiah.
Hector Bedoya, Northern Sonoma County.
Alex Hart, Siskiyou County.
Jake McKenzie, City of Roanoke Park, and wearing my smart uniform today. So,
illustrious board member. And Valerie, would you please?
Good morning, Chair Bedoya and members of the board. I'm Valerie Quinto, Executive Officer. To my left is Nathan Jacobson, counsel to the board. To my right is Claudia Villacorta, Assistant Executive Officer. On Zoom, we have Josh Curtis, also Assistant Executive Officer. Across from me is Deidre Wilkerson, Executive Assistant, and other staff will introduce themselves as their items come up. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Item number 5, information item. It's an update on the Russian River Watershed Association.
Good morning, Chair Bedoya and members of the board. I'm Ben Ford. I'm the mayor of Cotati and vice chair of the Russian River Watershed Association board. Our chair, Mendocino County Supervisor Mo Mulheron, is unable to be here today, so I'm standing in for her. We're happy to be here to start off your day with good news about the work being done by the Russian River Watershed Association on behalf of its 10 member agencies. We value very highly our long-term partnership with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. So today, our Executive Director, Andy Rogers, will lead us through brief overviews of many of the programs. And if you have questions at the end, we're happy to take those, as is our founding board chair, your board member, Jake McKenzie.
Good morning, board members. Yes, Andy Rogers, Executive Director of the Russian River Watershed Association. It's very nice to be here again. Hard to believe it's only been a year or so since the last visit. So we are, as our vice chair mentioned, we're going to going through. There's a fair amount of information in this slide deck, and I'm going to essentially touch on a lot of it, really to see if there's any questions on it, further questions that you have on it, also just to put it in for the record for reference later. So we have the slide deck, don't we? Here we go. So we're just going to have a really quick overview of the I'm going to call it RWA. Look at the watershed a bit, our approach as an organization, and how we organize our tasks that we do each year, and highlight some of the ones that we're working on right now. So 22 years ago, RWA was formed as a coalition of cities, counties that make up the district, and really to come together to do things together on behalf of clean water, habitat restoration, and watershed enhancement. Obviously, a lot of nexus overlap with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. So our members represent our wonderful 1,485 square mile watershed, almost exactly half and half between Mendocino County and Sonoma County. And again, this has been a 22-year organization. Quickly, we're set up by, we have elected officials from each of our member agencies appointed as directors. And then we have a memorandum of understanding, which has remained unchanged for those 22 years. It allocates how we are governed, how we make decisions, and how we fund the projects that we're working on. Myself, I am an executive director, and I have some technical and administrative staff that support myself and the member agencies. Our City of Ukiah has always been the administering agency for the RRWA, and 100% of our budget comes from our member agencies. And then we have a number of committees that support the activities of the RRWA. So yes, 22 years, lots of work, lots of experience, lots of connections with our partner agencies, like the Water Board, but constituents, nonprofits, and organizations and municipalities outside of the Russian River. Really, how do we do all of this good work at scale and at lower cost? So this is something that this group is certainly familiar with, but our watershed is made up of sub-watersheds within those, the jurisdictions that make up our member agencies. The two major reservoirs are 110-mile main stem of the river, all the tribs, and, of course, the people and the habitat that exists and depends on the watershed. So one of the things that RWA does very at a very high level in everything we do is there is a prevailing understanding of looking at the landscape, and most people think about a roadmap of where things are. And really, those roadmaps are overlays on the watershed systems that exist. Again, I'm speaking to the choir here in this audience, but these are things that we try to change the perspectives of what we do in our land. Even if it's hard infrastructure, there is a relationship to the watershed and its health. When we do it together as a watershed, the value is, of course, greater than the sum of its parts. So our approach, the active words that we use to describe really what RWA does in a fiscal year, we get together. We certainly need to do that in order to come up with collaborative ideas, and we share information. So there's expertise that exists in all of our member agencies, and RWA is a means for which that expertise is shared watershed-wide. We leverage that expertise, and of course we evolve over time, and then as nature and economics throws curveballs at us, we adapt as we go and try to stay ahead.
So I want to just briefly address the value of this convening aspect of what RWA does to me as an elected official in a small jurisdiction. You know, within the 2 square miles that make up Cotati, it's easy to not see beyond my borders, and this convening is the convening aspect of RWA helps elected officials who are typically relatively short-term in the business get up to speed quickly on our place within the watershed. And the niches and the ways we interact across the entire watershed. So this is both true at the the elected official level, but also our technical staff across the agencies work very closely together and build education programs that we couldn't do individually. On the next slide, we have a brief mention, one example from this this spring. We had a Sonoma Water led us on a great tour of all the restoration work along Dry Creek, and that builds an understanding of the watershed place that all of our different agencies fit in, what it takes to bring us our water, and what the impacts of that are across the watershed. So this is hugely valuable to me as a representative of a small jurisdiction, and helping to see how we fit into the bigger picture. Let's go one more slide. So because of that cross-jurisdiction work, we're able to do a lot of these programs that we as a small jurisdiction couldn't do on our own. So you'll see examples in the next couple of slides about many education programs and outreach programs that we're able to have present in our community that we couldn't pull off all on our own.
Great. So in sharing the information, that comes in a lot of different forms, but anywhere from advocacy, collaborations, industry group connections and memberships. We certainly put on training that's available to, could be available to contractors or folks dealing with low impact development. It could deal with staff training for various programs and new legislation that's creating programs. But one of the outcomes of sharing that information was a program that's been a high priority of RWA for many years, which is getting unused and expired medications in the right place, disposed of properly, not in the landfill, not in the collection system, but properly collected and incinerated. And this, our efforts really, and Alameda's efforts and LA were three areas combined that helped lead a patchwork of other programs, which led to legislation at the state level to require the pharmaceutical industry to pick up the tab for proper disposal of, and that happened in 2021. Things really kicked in on that. So we're very proud of what collaboration can do. There's a lot of power in that, even at a statewide level. So we try to leverage our format of getting together and doing things on behalf of a watershed-wide membership. The Russian River Friendly Landscaping Program is since 2010. It's been a longstanding program. Very proud of it. All the signs that you see in all the cities, from Ukiah to Cotati, came from an RWA program distributing an image and creek signage that the city of Santa Rosa began. Again, a way to leverage an idea, a grid idea in one place and deploying it watershed-wide. Supporting the engineering community and the plan check community and the low-impact development, providing residents and property owners guides in Spanish and English around how to manage their properties. And then we have a tremendous success with a bilingual placemat that's in, I think, 70-plus locations throughout the watershed, in restaurants, libraries, chambers of commerce, permit centers, et cetera. Another great outcome of RWA being together is, what other things can we do and incubate? And one of the things was the wastewater treatment operators. You know, they have quite intense jobs, very complicated. They need to get together and talk shop and learn from each other. And so we have now put on three wastewater treatment operators forums for them to get together and do just this at three different facilities in the watershed. We have anywhere from 7 to 10 facility representatives coming to these now, and now they are taking this on themselves. So we've incubated this. Now we're in a support role, and that's exactly the kind of thing that RWA does. And then over time, we evolve. We support grants and programs that are developed. The Russian River Regional Monitoring Program was something that the Water Board proposed to the RWA Board as an idea, I think in 16, 17, somewhere in there. And now that is a real and a very important program. You notice I am going fast, so please, if you have any questions along the way, feel free. But there has been programs that, like the Streets to Creeks, that you're probably very familiar with and may have been received individual presentations on in the past. But RWA, this is another way that this program is deployed watershed-wide, which is now not just our watershed. It exists in Marin and Napa. And other jurisdictions. So again, good ideas have legs, and RWA is a way to promote that. And then, meanwhile, things happen along the way during RWA's existence, and I don't need to review all these because you all are familiar with this. But we adapt our work plans annually to not only try to manage what has happened, but to anticipate what might happen. And so we have all these elements built into our work plans.
So with that adaptation means annual looking at the projects that we take on and refocusing. And I want to emphasize again, as a small agency, we couldn't have anywhere near this this level of engagement with watershed-wide issues on our own. But RWA gives all 10 member agencies a seat at the table in designing these programs and setting up their implementation. So all of this work has only been possible because of this agreement. I think this cross-jurisdiction work is a great model for accomplishing things that don't live within our borders. So I've been a big fan of the RWA structure here. We're not going to go through all of these, but these are sort of the areas we think about our various programs.
So just to wrap up with some more example programs, the Russian River Friendly Landscaping Program, again, since 2010. We have biannual symposiums. The next one will be in February of 2026, but we've covered things, and we have worldwide experts speaking to us about various topics of interest to the contractor, designer, community, planners, et cetera, around rainwater harvesting, fire safe, water smart, landscaping, all kinds of approaches, food incorporation, et cetera. So we will certainly be sharing with your staff and with you when those events come up. Our Water, Our World is a integrated pest management program that's extremely successful. We have a consultant that this is all she does, that she trains store staff on alternative products to manage pests and fertilizer in a much more earth-friendly way. And this is also one of the permit requirements our MS4s have. But again, using a regulatory requirement, turning it into something more than just complying, we are really adding value to our watershed community. Lots of community outreach really is the theme throughout. We have a high school video contest every year that's extremely popular. It was part of the KRCB fundraiser just recently, and it's a wonderful experience, and we look forward to that every single year. And then, of course, the typical platforms and other kinds of materials. A partnership that has been also become very exciting is with Sonoma State University, and which is their WATERS program, and that is an acronym, but just trust me, I can't remember what it stands for, but it speaks for itself, and that is it is funding that the RWA provides the Center for Environmental Inquiry to support student faculty teams to investigate, research, and report back and develop initiatives that are important to our member agencies. And most of them span around water quality. And so we had about a three-year program around the nexus of people experiencing homelessness and water quality. Work very closely with your staff on that, as well as many others in law enforcement, the health departments, et cetera. And so we're looking forward to the programs coming up in the next fiscal year. And just wanted to close with, we are looking ahead. The RWA does reevaluate our work plan every single year, but we decided it was time to look further ahead, 3 to 5 years. And we are right now in the midst of preparing a strategic plan to give us maybe a clearer North Star to theme all the work we do. And we are definitely connecting with your staff along the way with this. So with that, I think that might be it. Yes. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for the presentation. As always, good to hear from you guys. I didn't hear any mention about pet waste, and could you address that, what the association is doing about that?
Yes, so our member agencies are doing an awful lot with pet waste, and RWA has a lot of outreach materials related to pet waste, and awareness of that is an issue. And so there's a lot of things that I didn't highlight here because we have 22 years of information, but those are ongoing things. When we table at events, we always have materials that address the pet waste problem, and making sure folks are aware that and why they should care about that, really, what it means for that. And those conversations come up a lot at our public tabling events. People are interested in that, and they're like, why do we have things on pets? The other piece of that is that relates to the safe medicine disposal, because veterinary medicine is also part of the medicine problem. And so folks have they hadn't thought about that before. So thanks for that question.
Well, Andy and Ben, thank you. I mean, it's really nice to start the day off on a really positive note, right? And you can appreciate sitting on a dais yourself. It's always a pleasure to hear positive things. I got two parts of my question, but I will link them together. You know, so Andy, I know you probably eat, breathe, and sleep Russian River, and so you're a guy that knows a lot about the river. Have you ever done any oral histories with people who knew the river before the dam, Coyote Dam, was built? And the reason I'm asking that question is, looking to the future, if Coyote Dam's not going to go away, but the management and the flows of the river may be different. In terms of strategic planning, and it really hit me when you were talking about working with the wastewater guys, you know, if wastewater is being discharged to the Russian River under contemporary flows, what kind of future are we doing? And this is a broader question for staff as well. What are we going to do if flows are a third of what they are today in the summer or even in the winter? But again, so, you know, have you connected the history of the river from oral histories and people that were around before 1960 and could remember it? And how and if you're doing any futuring about how things could be different once the Potter Valley project goes away?
That is a huge question, and I appreciate it because I love the big picture thinking with that. So there's a lot of answers to that, because there are I certainly have been working with the Russian River a long time, but so have an awful lot of people. And so some of the first things that come to mind are that if you remember the Confluence initiative, Supervisor Gore and Copkins got started, I think it was 2017, where everybody kayaked on the river. And along the way, they had expertise and folks who knew the time that you're talking about before the dam, what it was like, and how you could walk across the river on the heads of steelhead and coho. And so there has been that context, and I would say related to, but I would say that It's been a while, so it's worth revisiting. So I appreciate the reminder. For Potter Valley, 2 years ago, RWA hosted a tour of our board and interested parties of the project, of the Lake Mendocino, of going up to Van Arsdale Dam and having experts talk about the significance of that and why it's important and why downstream public agencies should care. So isn't that all the way up there? And obviously there's a huge connection with the lower watershed agencies and that project. That was 2 years ago. A lot's happened. And so we're planning another one this fall to do that again for an update. And so that conversation is active and ongoing, and you know, and we're RWA is a way where that information can be disseminated, and there we can set up and have dialogues around things with our member agencies. So our role really is to get our board members informed as they want. We get questions for that they would like to have debated or presentations around, so we're set up to facilitate those kinds of conversations. And then there was another element to your question that I wanted to answer, and now I forget what it was. Yes, absolutely. And you know, now I remember, thank you. There's been efforts for different parts of the watershed, historical hydrology, historical ecology, which incorporates a lot of, you know, prior to the dam and going back further than that, just sort of what the watershed did on its own before we started changing things around. And so those are all important to know as we plan for the future. And obviously the tunnel to the Eel didn't exist back then either. And so all those things are really important to know to do the planning that you're talking about.
Yeah, the tunnels existed since 1908, but yeah, Aren't many people left that remember that. But I did know a gentleman that just passed who was born in 1917 and talked about his grandfather and his uncle filling in all the backwater sloughs along the river before it was so channelized. And those are the key elements that are missing for like coho recovery, where we want backwater refugia, right? So it's just I think the past could teach the future, and the future might get more, the river might look more like the past depending on flows and what we saw during the drought when Lake Mendocino essentially dried up. That's a real possibility, because the only thing it collect, if it wasn't for the diversion, there'd be no Lake Mendocino, right? And so I just think that your organization is critically positioned to bring all the parts together and keep the discussion fresh and looking to the future and how might the river affect people's lives, and how you as an organization, because of your knowledge and your depth of networking that you've got, I mean, I think you're in a great position to be a strong voice to help everybody in the future as things change. And we know that change can be difficult, and what we heard yesterday, it can also be expensive sometimes. So yeah, this is great. Thank you very much for starting our day off like this.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm a historical remnant of the Russian River Watershed Association. Supervisor Paul Kelly and I, back in those early days, were the people who worked to help establish our RWA. And at that time, the model was an organization in Marin County, which my old colleague Harry Saradarian from EPA Region 9 had been involved in forming. So there was a model. The model was adopted. And what's really reassuring to me is to have this presentation and the work that has been done, the work that continues to be done, and conditions have changed in the in the south end of the watershed, the operation of the sub-regional wastewater treatment plant has altered dramatically with the pumping of treated wastewater up to the geysers and with the reductions in water consumption in the communities of Roanoke Park and Cotati and Santa Rosa, so that the flows into the sub-regional plant are not what they were anticipated in being. So all of that is good stuff, and I'm particularly pleased to, and I'm well aware of the cooperation with Sonoma State University and Claudia Luke Center for Environmental Inquiry and the studies that are going on in Copeland Creek and tributaries that continue to the Laguna de Santa Rosa and into the Russian River. So a good report. Pleased to hear that you're continuing, and who knows, maybe you'll be successful in getting the city of Roanoke Park to rejoin the organization. I can't promise any help in that direction, but I would encourage you to go back to them and make sure that all the jurisdictions are part of your association. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Board members, any other questions? Well, thank you very much. This is a time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of Resolution R1-2025-0019, amendments to the Water Quality Control Plan for the North Coast Region to incorporate applicable provisions of statewide plans and policies and improve clarity. This item has been properly noticed. We will begin with a staff presentation followed by board discussion and comments from interested persons. Interested persons are generally limited to 5 minutes each. Board members' questions and comments, other than questions clarifying the material being presented, should be held until after the staff presentation or until there is a break in the presentation for questions. We will now begin with a staff presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Bedoya and all board members. My name is Michelle Fuller. I'm an environmental scientist in the planning unit here today to present our 2025 Basin Plan Remediation Project as part of the public hearing to consider adoption of the non-regulatory amendments to the Water Quality Control Plan for the North Coast Region, also called the Basin Plan. Yes, is it? Do you need me to be closer to it? For the order of today's public hearing, I'll start with a presentation on the revisions to the Basin Plan. Next, answer board questions before the board takes oral public comment, and then the board will deliberate and consider adopting Resolution R1-2025-19 and the attachments before closing the hearing. Documents included with this item on the agenda are the staff summary report and attachments, including the proposed resolution with a strikeout underlined copy of the Basin Plan showing the proposed changes, the clean copy of the Basin Plan with the proposed changes incorporated, the project staff report describing the project in detail, the response to written public comments document, and the public notice for this hearing. For my presentation, I will briefly cover the Basin Plan generally, when and how to amend the Basin Plan, and then move into the details of the 2025 Basin Plan Remediation Project. I'll close with the staff recommendation for adoption of the resolution approving the amendment of our Basin Plan. These are some vintage Basin Plan covers from the 1975 Basin Plans for our region. The Basin Plan is the foundational water quality control document for the North Coast region. the Basin Plan implements Federal Clean Water Act and California Water Code, forms the basis for regulatory actions taken by the North Coast Water Board, and contains water quality standards and regulations adopted by the State Water Board and North Coast Water Board. The Basin Plan establishes beneficial uses for surface waters and groundwater, the water quality objectives necessary to support those uses, the anti-degradation policies, the prohibitions, plans, policies, and action plans implementing water quality protections, and the monitoring programs conducted to ensure water quality standards attainment. So when and how do we make changes to this foundational document? Basin Plan amendments are necessary to modify the list of beneficial uses, water quality objectives, or implementation programs like TMDLs or action plans. These changes are regulatory or substantive amendments as they modify current regulations in the Basin Plan. The Basin Plan can also be amended to make it consistent with state and federal laws and regulations. This is a non-regulatory amendment, and this item is in bold to indicate that this applies to the 2025 Basin Plan remediation project. The Basin Plan should be clear, consistent, and current. One component of this project is amending the Basin Plan to make it consistent with federal and state regulations. When new objectives, plans, and policies that have been adopted by the State Water Board are brought into our Basin Plan, this is considered an editorial amendment. New statewide requirements that override existing Basin Plan language are in full effect once passed by State Water Board, approved by the Office of Administrative Law and US EPA. These have already been through the regulatory process at the state level, including CEQA, peer review, and public comment as required. Regional water boards then make editorial amendments to their respective basin plans to bring in new federal or state regulations to improve consistency and clarity. This applies to the project before you today. Another part of this project is the strictly editorial revisions to our basin plan. Editorial amendments to the Basin Plan can include revisions of existing Basin Plan language to improve the accuracy and clarity of the Basin Plan, so long as the amendments do not have any new regulatory effects. Editorial amendments are not a project under CEQA because the editorial changes cause neither a direct physical change in the environment nor a reasonably foreseeable indirect physical change in the environment. The editorial amendment also does not have a scientific component that would require peer review. This 2025 Basin Plan remediation project was initially identified through the 2023 triennial review of our Basin Plan. The project was described in the triennial review staff report and included in the planning program work plan for fiscal years 2024 through 2027 adopted by this board in June 2024. The purpose of this project is to incorporate State Water Board adopted water quality objectives that are already in effect, remediate the Basin Plan to comply with accessibility requirements, and make editorial revisions to improve the clarity and consistency of the Basin Plan. Changes are proposed for every chapter of the Basin Plan, including reorganizing the implementation information with the creation of a new chapter for watershed action plans, including total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs. All of the proposed changes are editorial and have no regulatory effect. Our first look at the proposed 2025 Basin Plan and the proposed amendment is an overview of the chapters. We have the current or 2018 Basin Plan chapter outline on the left and the proposed 2025 Basin Plan chapter outline on the right. Previously, the implementation information for both region-wide and watershed-specific programs were in one chapter. In the proposed 2025 Basin Plan, we have a chapter for region-wide implementation information and have created a new chapter dedicated to TMDLs and watershed-specific action plans. The information in these chapters is not new, but chapters have been reorganized to improve clarity. Additionally, a new appendix has been created containing a crosswalk document guiding readers to new section locations from the 2018 Basin Plan to the proposed 2025 Basin Plan. I want to highlight some of the thinking that went into the proposed new chapter structure. As I mentioned earlier, we now have seven chapters as we have split our implementation information to create a new chapter for TMDLs and watershed-specific action plans. The proposed new Basin Plan chapter structure organizes the chapters in order from broadly applicable information to more specific. Chapter 1 is our introduction with information about the North Coast region and the basin plan generally. Chapter 2 covers beneficial uses of water for the North Coast region. And Chapter 3 holds the water quality objectives needed to support those beneficial uses. Then we get into the implementing mechanisms of water quality control for the North Coast region, beginning with the more broad statewide implementation information applicable to the North Coast region in Chapter 4, then focusing into the region-wide implementation in Chapter 5, and then watershed-specific TMDLs and action plans in Chapter 6, and ending with the surveillance and monitoring programs to assess implementation in Chapter 7. I'll describe the amendment chapter by chapter. In the introduction chapter, we have updated the reference to the North Coast region map to its online location, added language in the settings section to more accurately reflect the social and cultural makeup of our region. We've removed references to dams that have been removed on the Klamath River, added language to the water quantity section to clarify that reduced water quantity can impact water quality, and added a new climate change section to provide general overview of climate change impacts in the North Coast region. In Chapter 2, in order to assist the reader in finding information, the beneficial uses have been alphabetized in both the narrative or list in the chapter and in Table 2-1, identifying beneficial use designations. We have removed the Klamath Dams from the list of hydroelectric projects, and the wetlands section has been updated to improve consistency with current statewide policies and procedures and federal requirements. In Chapter 3, editorial changes have been made to bring statewide water quality objectives adopted since our last basin plan update into our basin plan. These objectives apply statewide and are already in effect. We worked with State Water Board's Division of Water Quality, other basin planners, and our attorney to finalize the summaries of these water quality objectives now found in the North Coast Basin Plan. Previously included objectives that have been superseded have been removed for clarity. The following chapters contain the provisions implementing these water quality objectives. The 2018 Basin Plan Chapter 4 content, titled Implementation, will be discussed in the next two chapters. Chapter 4 in the 2025 Basin Plan contains statewide implementation information relevant to the North Coast region. As noted earlier, staff moved the statewide implementation information to improve the organizational clarity of the Basin Plan. This chapter now includes 34 individual statewide plans and policies to improve understanding, affirm the applicability of these plans and policies to the North Coast region, and improve access to the full regulatory framework necessary for implementation. A brief summary of each statewide implementation measure is included, as well as a link to the full text of each. This is a change in the way this information is displayed in our basin plan. The 2018 basin plan contained a single link to the State Water Board's plans and policies webpage to direct the reader to find relevant information. Staff believe listing this information in our basin plan and guiding the reader to the full text if needed will improve clarity and understanding about statewide plans and policies that apply in the North Coast region. The 2018 Basin Plan chapter on implementation applied to the North Coast region has been divided into two chapters. This chapter now contains all of the implementation information, prohibitions, plans, and policies that apply region-wide as we narrow our scope from the statewide implementation information that came in the chapter before. This reorganization includes moving the temperature policy from within the TMDL section into the more appropriate region-wide implementation section. In addition to the reorganization, a new introduction section to the non-point source measures section has been added to assist the reader, and the policy on disposal of solid waste and policy for agricultural wastewater management have been updated to provide information consistent with current regulations and improve clarity. The remaining information from the 2018 Basin Plan's implementation chapter is all of the TMDLs and watershed-specific action plans now found in this new Chapter 6 of the 2025 Basin Plan. This chapter includes some new explanatory language and structure to improve clarity, including a new Section 6.2 listing all TMDLs for the North Coast region in a table format. Section 6.1 information remains in front of the TMDLs with the impaired waters policy and sediment TMDL implementation policy. And the TMDLs and action plans are now alphabetized by water body. As I just said, the 2025 Basin Plan includes a new Section 6.2 with a table of all TMDLs for the North Coast region. They're listed in alphabetical order by water body with their pollutant listing and implementation information. This table includes TMDLs developed by the North Coast Water Board as well as those developed by US EPA. In order to accommodate the newly created TMDL and watershed-specific implementation chapter, contents from the 2018 Basin Plan Chapter 6, Surveillance and Monitoring, have been moved to a new Chapter 7. The surveillance and monitoring content has been updated to remove outdated information for programs no longer in effect and bring in descriptions of current monitoring programs and information. Staff also proposed changes to the Basin Plan appendices. Appendix 1 is a table of Basin Plan amendments that will be retained and updated for the 2025 Basin Plan. Appendix 2 is a newly proposed appendix that I will discuss in the next slide. The 2018 Basin Plan includes other appendices that are copies of resolutions, plans, and policies that are now described in Chapter 4 of the 2025 Basin Plans with links to their full text. For the 2025 Basin Plan, staff recommend removing appendices 3 through 9 as unnecessary and already incorporated by reference. For those readers very familiar with the 2018 Basin Plan sections, this new Appendix 2 is a crosswalk document that will be helpful in finding the new locations of implementation information. The crosswalk includes an overview of the new chapter locations as well as subsections within each implementation chapter. The remediated Basin Plan also has a clickable table of contents and a navigation pane to quickly find and move to specific sections. The Basin Plan remediation project was first proposed and described in the 2023 Triennial Review, which included public outreach and engagement and a public comment period on the staff report and planning program work plan that included this project. Staff conducted outreach specifically about the Basin Plan remediation project using the Basin Planning GovDelivery email subscription list, our tribal contact list, and the North Coast Basin Plan webpage. A 45-day public comment period was held from March 13th through April 28th. Staff also conducted internal outreach and engagement, both during triennial review and specific to this project. Emails solicited input on outdated information in the 2018 Basin Plan, and meetings were held to discuss non-regulatory updates. Staff appreciate the specific contributions from other staff to improve the clarity and consistency of the Basin Plan. We plan to make presentations following adoption of the remediated Basin Plan to familiarize staff with the new structure. During the 45-day public comment period, staff received one letter from Friends of the Shasta River with multiple comments on the Basin Plan. The response to comments document includes responses to comments as appropriate, often answers to specific questions. Several of the comments made constitute requests for substantive regulatory amendments to the Basin Plan. Because the Basin Plan remediation project is an entirely editorial or non-regulatory amendment to the Basin Plan, these requests cannot be included in this project. Staff have recorded the comments as future Basin Plan amendment requests for consideration during the next triennial review. Friends of Shasta River can also use our online Basin Plan Amendment Proposal form to submit these requests with additional details for consideration during the next triennial review or make additional requests. Instructions for doing so were sent directly to Friends of Shasta River and included in the response to comments. A Basin Plan amendment is not final until approved by the North Coast Water Board, State Water Board, and Office of Administrative Law. If the North Coast Water Board approves the resolution before you today, staff will work with State Water Board staff to take our amendment through the State Water Board's public comment period and consideration of approval meeting. If approved by State Water Board, staff will submit amendment materials to the Office of Administrative Law for their consideration of approval. Because this amendment does not add or modify water quality standards, US EPA approval is not required, but a copy of the revisions will be sent to them for their records. I hope this presentation has provided a good overview of the 2025 Basin Plan Remediation Project. Staff recommend the board approve Resolution R1-2025-19, amendments to the Water Quality Control Plan for the North Coast Region to incorporate applicable provisions of statewide plans and policies and improve clarity. The resolution includes supporting documents as attachments showing the changes made to the basin plan, and I'm happy to answer any questions now.
Well, thank you so much, Michelle. A lot of work went into this. Thank you and your staff and coworkers for all the work you put into it and reorganizing this document. And so we'll have board discussion and then followed by any interested parties. Board members.
Mr. Chair, if I may, thank you, Michelle. Really like the changes. Add, as we were reminded yesterday in our hearing, words matter. And one of the things that jumped out to me was one of the revisions you did in Chapter 1 in the introduction, where it said in the water quality section, language has been added to clarify that reduced stream flows impact water quality. Thank you. Right? I mean, it's obvious, but yesterday we went down a rabbit hole defining what is waste and how we get people comfortable with our words. And for years I've said, you know, I'm going on a limb here, but fish need water, right? And flows affect water quality. So just having it clarified, having it in there is so important for what this board is required to do, and having clarity in definitions is huge. And the alphabetization of how it's brilliant. Thank you. It was really nice job. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It was definitely a planning unit team that led all of the track changes, but we received a lot of outside staff input that really helped strengthen the document, hearing from folks that implement the basin plan.
Mr. Chair, Michelle, thank you for your presentation. Great. I just first have a question. I think it was around slides 17 or 18, you stated that you and your team had moved the temperature section from where it was in TMDLs to, I guess, a more general broad section. You said it was quite obvious. For those of us that it's not quite obvious to, could you explain that comment?
Yeah, absolutely. The basin plan contains a temperature policy that applies region-wide. It was adopted by the North Coast Water Board. And its previous location, well, current location in the basin plan is within the TMDL section because, as you can now see in Table 6.2, so many of the TMDLs are implemented through the temperature policy is applicable, and so that had been contained there. But because of it being in the TMDL section and not a more broadly region-wide applicable section, it wasn't obvious to everyone looking at the basin plan that it would apply more broadly.
Okay. Thank you. And lastly, I was just curious, through your process, your team had reached, you sent out the emails that go out on the listserv for those who are signed up, but then did you do individual outreach to certain groups or entities? Did that occur during this, you and your team? Did you do that?
We had the opportunity, sometimes opportunities would come up in a combination with other projects where we could talk about projects currently going on, and this would be on the list. The Basin Planning Gov Delivery email subscription list is our primary method of communication with folks, and then the web page. Our specific list we have is for tribal outreach, and I don't know of any other examples that were specifically focused.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to ensure that if you are reaching out individually, aside from the tribes, I just meant if there are any groups or entities that you reach out to specifically outside of those two methods, just to ensure that if you're doing that, to make sure there's balance and you're reaching out to maybe, you know, groups that might have different views than the ones that you're reaching out to, just to make sure that you're getting all points in your groundwork, so to speak.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Jake, Ryan, any comment? Michelle, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Deidre, is there anybody on?
No public comment.
Okay. So this being an action item, if there's no more discussion.
I'll make a motion to adopt proposed resolution R1-2025-0019.
I'll second that.
Deidre?
Board Member McKenzie?
Aye.
Board Member Sundberg?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hart?
Aye.
Chair Bedoya?
Aye.
Board Member Giusti?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Now, I think we will take a break and move into closed session. And come back.
Yes, I think I need to share which items are to be discussed in closed session. And I'm pulling up the list. The closed session will include items 10D1, 10D3, 10D5, and 10D12. XII, just to be clear.
Thank you. And do you anticipate a time that we would be returning?
Eleven? Yeah, I think an hour is a good rough estimate.
Let's make that assumption that we will return by 11.
Yeah, could be quicker.
Okay.
But I'm the one presenting after closed session. So if we start sooner,
good.
We won't be waiting for anyone.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, back from closed session. Regional Board program updates, program priorities for fiscal year 2025 through 2026. Valerie?
Okay, I think I should first report that there was no action to report from the closed session that we just came back from. And I can launch into a presentation. So, good still morning, Chair Bedoya and members of the board. It is my pleasure each year to have the opportunity to provide the board and public with a pretty high level overview of the variety of activities that are going on within this organization and highlight some of the things that that may be new or different in terms of what we're planning for the coming year. So in this presentation, I will touch briefly on our mission and vision. I will share a quick reminder of the purpose of work planning and priority setting. I will talk about the format. This slide says new. The format was new last year for how we are sharing this information with the board and public. So that'll be a reminder of how the information can be accessed on our website. And then go through highlights from each of our programs. And then take questions and comments from the board and the public. So I always like to, if I'm speaking broadly to the regional board's work, I always like to ground that in our mission and vision because these are really what underpin all of the work that we do. So this mission statement is for the entire water board's family. To preserve, enhance, and restore the quality of California's water resources and drinking water for the protection of the environment, public health, and all beneficial uses, and to ensure proper water resource allocation and efficient use for the benefit of present and future generations. So we're here to protect, we at the regional board are here to protect clean water for all uses and all people now and into the future. Our vision that is specific to our region is healthy watersheds, effective regulation, and strong partnerships. And it's represented here as a pyramid because the idea is that healthy watersheds are not possible without a foundation of strong partnerships, nor is effective regulation. And so in our daily work, we are always striving
to make sure that our work is effectuating strong partnerships, that our regulations are effective, and that everything that we are doing is working toward healthier watersheds. The purpose in that context of working toward healthier watersheds, the purpose of work planning and priority setting for staff is to identify priorities, to assess the available resources, and based on that, set expectations for what can be accomplished in a year based on those priorities and resources, and then also to have a way to track progress and make course corrections. For the board and public, the purpose of this process is to provide transparency and accountability, and also to manage expectations about what priorities can be accomplished with our resources. Our priorities for the upcoming fiscal year can be accessed online, and this is just a screenshot to show what the web page looks like with our program priorities. It has each of these bars for our initiatives and programs, and folks can click on a little arrow to expand each bar, and here's an example of what it looks like when you expand a bar and get more information, including program context, some overview and purpose information, relevant links to find more information on our website, and then a bulleted list of program priorities for the upcoming fiscal year. In this format, we have our programs grouped not by our org chart, but we have them grouped by how we think somebody who was looking for information about a program, how we think that might be intuitive for them to find that program. So we have a section for strategic initiatives, many of which span across the regional board's programs. We have a section for programs related to planning, monitoring, and assessment. We have our lengthiest section, which is for permitting programs. We are a regulatory agency, so that is a lot of what we do is permitting programs. We have quite a few of them. And then at the end, we have a small catch-all section for other programs that didn't fit into any of those major buckets. So I will start now with the highlights from our various programs and initiatives, starting with our strategic initiatives. So one strategic initiative that continues at the regional board is our Racial Equity Action Plan. As you'll recall, this effort began with a racial equity resolution several years back. And in this current fiscal year that we are just wrapping up, we had the significant milestone of finalizing our 2025 Racial Equity Action Plan that outlines specific actions to be taken in the organization to advance racial equity. So with that plan now finalized, our plans for this year are to begin to implement that by incorporating actions into all of our programs across the organization. And really with a continued focus on building and strengthening relationships with tribes and Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities. Our climate resilience initiatives continue to be lively. They fall into a couple of very broad categories, including providing support to local, regional, and statewide initiatives, and also providing support to projects within the regional board. And so some examples of that on the local end, our climate resilience specialist is providing support for local efforts in Humboldt Bay, the Russian River, and the Klamath River related to climate resilience. Statewide, one example is providing support to the North Coast Report of California's fifth climate assessment, which I think is really exciting that the regional board's voice will be reflected in that statewide report. And then at a regional board level, some of the projects that the climate specialist is supporting that involve climate resilience include outstanding national resource waters, the total maximum daily load for the Laguna de Santa Rosa, and our region's involvement with changes to the Potter Valley Project. Another strategic initiative is watershed stewardship, which starts on this slide and continues on the next. Our watershed stewardship efforts in Humboldt Bay. I should have been reading off names of who's leading each of these, so I'll just start here. You can see the others on the slide. I'll start here and note that Elizabeth Pope leads our watershed stewardship efforts in Humboldt Bay.
In Elk River, those efforts include coordinated monitoring, a contract for the county to be assessing solutions to flooding on Elk River Road. So Elizabeth is the contract manager for that. And then also preparing to provide the regional board an update on Elk River TMDL implementation, which is the TMDL requires that staff provide such an update every 5 years. And it feels like just yesterday that the last update occurred. And then in Humboldt Bay, stewardship efforts focus on supporting climate resilience initiatives and also supporting regulatory efforts related to development of an offshore wind port in Humboldt Bay. Continuing on watershed stewardship, we also have concerted watershed stewardship efforts in the Scott and Shasta Rivers led by Eli Scott. You heard a lot about this at our last board meeting in May, but briefly, the priorities for stewardship in those watersheds this year include continuing to implement the TMDL and existing waivers for ag activities in those watersheds, while also developing new waste discharge requirements to replace those waivers, conducting monitoring in the Scott River watershed, and engaging with State Water Board efforts related to stream flow in those watersheds, which are really critical and essential to achieving water quality objectives and TMDL attainment in those watersheds. Our restoration program is another strategic initiative led by Jake Shannon, our restoration specialist. The focus of that program this year will be implementing statewide permit programs for, you know, permits that are specific to restoration activities, continuing to support tribal restoration after wildfire. New this year is renewal of the 401 water quality certification for the Trinity River Restoration Project. And then also continued oversight and support of restoration in the Klamath River following dam removal. Flow and riparian protection initiative is led by Brian McFadden, our flow and riparian specialist. The major focus of work in that program this year is development of the narrative flow objective. And then additionally, Brian is providing support for the Scott and Shasta waste discharge requirements and also providing support to other regional board and state board projects and programs related to his expertise. And then finally, under strategic initiatives, this year we added to the website a section called Other Emerging Issues, which was things that are big things that are happening in our world of water quality protection or our world more broadly that we need to be paying attention to and putting effort toward, even if they don't fit neatly in a particular program. So I will note there regional board staff's involvement with Coyote Valley Dam turbidity issues. As I believe Chair Bedoya mentioned during his chair's report, NOAA has released now the biological opinion related to continued operation of that facility. And so regional board staff are engaging with NOAA on that and determining how we can use our authorities to best support the goals of that biological opinion. In addition, our staff will be, you may have read in the news, I think I provided board members the news articles about a study that's being undertaken about raising the dam and the feasibility and options for that. And so our staff will be also participating, you know, as one agency partner in helping to advise that effort. Another issue that we are closely tracking is mining and suction dredging. The Trump administration, or excuse me, President Trump, issued an executive order titled Immediate Measures to Increase American Mineral Production that we foresee could be placing pressure on mining claims on federal lands and encouraging folks to be doing more exploration and proposing mining on those claims on federal lands. And so that's something that we've heard bits and pieces here and there. It hasn't really ramped up yet, but that's something we're keeping our eyes closely on in terms of how we need to be engaged in protecting water quality if and when those activities ramp up in response to the president's executive order. Another issue that has been emerging and continues to be emerging is PFAS, per and polyfluoroalkyl substances, and in particular, our region's involvement in that has a lot to do with monitoring of those substances at some of our facilities and how to appropriately and feasibly build that into permit requirements. We also are putting a great deal of effort toward responding in our permits to a recent Supreme Court decision regarding receiving water limitations or endpoint requirements in NPDES permits. And so that cuts across the various types of NPDES permits and NPDES permitting programs that we have. And so the board will be hearing more details about that as we begin to bring permits that include new language that is responsive to that Supreme Court decision. And then finally, outside the world of water quality, but very much impacting everything in our world these days, is the emergence of generative artificial intelligence, or Gen AI, and really, exploring how those tools could be used to make our work more efficient and to help us be more effective at serving the public. So there's a little sampling for you. Moving on from strategic initiatives to planning, monitoring, and assessment, briefly highlighting our basin planning program, which has a lot going on. Basin plan remediation, the first big effort on that just concluded with the board's adoption of that project in the previous agenda item today. But staff will continue to put forward effort as that item is now brought to state board for their approval and Office of Administrative Law. Everything on this list is a triennial review project: cultural beneficial uses, narrative flow objective, outstanding national resource waters, Trinity River temperature objective, and the Lower Eel River exception to the seasonal discharge prohibition. So these are all triennial review projects, and in August we anticipate that our written EO report will include some brief updates on the status of each of these triennial review projects, which is something that I believe board members requested, to get more frequent updates on the status of triennial review projects that our staff are undertaking in this three-year triennial review period. The TMDL program work continues on the Russian River pathogen TMDL, anticipated to be brought before this board for adoption in August. Wallala River sediment TMDL is anticipated to have a workshop before this board. I think that is also in August, so in the first half of the fiscal year. And then ongoing work on the Laguna de Santa Rosa sediment, phosphorus, nitrogen, and temperature TMDL. And all of those efforts are led up by our unit senior, Lisa Bernard. The Integrated Report Program work is led by Mary Bartholomew. We have some interesting kind of overlapping of integrated report periods. You heard a lot about this in a recent agenda item, an information item, but we are working on public comment responses and any revisions that might be needed based on public comments to the 2026 integrated report. And then at the same time in this fiscal year, working on, for future integrated reports, Klamath River resegmentation mapping, which Mary spoke to in her recent presentation, and then also beginning to work on some off-cycle assessment work for the 2028 integrated report, and working with state board to incorporate the coastal pathogen 4B assessment that the regional board adopted a resolution directing staff to put that forward for the 2028 integrated report. So interesting things in that program with the overlap of different cycles and work in different watersheds. Our surface water ambient monitoring program, there's not too much new here. This is a lot of ongoing work that involves collaboration, long-term planning, training of our field staff, and really, really supporting programs throughout our office with monitoring resources. Our freshwater harmful algal bloom program also continues much the same, really providing a hub for partner training, helping partners with monitoring plans, lots of statewide coordination with partners, conducting pre-holiday assessment, and then also emergency monitoring and response. As we move on to permitting programs, which is a meaty section, I'll pause and see if anyone has any questions that you'd like to ask before I move on.
If I may. You know, for years I've been hearing about a narrative flow objective coming forward. I guess I thought it was just going to be a paragraph in my naivete. But the fact that it's been talked about for so long, what will that look like? I mean, is that a meaty document? Is it per watershed, per river? What's it going to look like?
I don't want to go too far into it because I'm not the expert. I will say that it is more than a paragraph,
okay.
And that it is not watershed by watershed. And I think that was the, you know, the idea of going with a narrowed flow objective was to do something that would kind of efficiently provide protection in all watersheds before getting into the watershed by watershed numeric approach.
But so it's not necessarily – so the narrative – maybe I'm getting thrown off by the word narrative. It potentially could be a document that could be linked to other existing permit documents or other documents that identify value of maintaining flow. I guess, you know, what's – just a 30,000-foot flyover, but it's just – we've been hearing about it for so long and – it must be meatier than I'm thinking it is.
It is meaty. It's a basin plan amendment. So it is setting policy for our region that as you said would kind of reach out and touch future efforts of the regional board and have impact on that because all of our other efforts need to be consistent with the policies in the basin plan.
Holly, would you like me to add in a little bit to that?
Sure, and Catherine's next to me as well.
Oh, okay. I see that there too. Well, Catherine's there, so I'll let her, why don't you go ahead, and if I need to fill in, please do, Catherine.
Good afternoon. Good morning. Catherine Carter, member of your staff. That is a really good question. I want to start by saying one of the things that is very important in this effort is that we make sure to be clear on the intent of the objective and that it in no way is meant to limit any or infringe upon any water rights activities. So a lot of the background work so far and what has taken a long time is being very thoughtful, meeting with the Division of Water Rights, meeting with State Board. We have more meetings upcoming. So I just wanted to kind of lay that out about before we really dove into the meat and potatoes. We wanted to make sure that we had we were in alignment with the State Board on what this was going to do and that they were supportive of the way we were going to move forward in this effort. So as it stands now, it is going to we're envisioning an objective that is narrative as opposed to numeric in what it relays and that it really expresses the types of supportive conditions that we want to see. There would be supporting information in the basin plan for that, you know, one line objective like we have for the rest of ours that describes what are the factors somebody should look at to see if you're meeting that objective, what programs are going to, how different programs could help look at meeting that objective to make very clear how we see it being implemented because we know it is kind of an ethereal thing. And to be effective, we need to make sure that we have powerful mechanisms to implement it, which we're pondering some new language about how to implement, including the possibility of some prohibitions. And you will be seeing an EO article, I think, for this August, upcoming one about the power of prohibitions to kind of give a little bit of a foundation about why do we have prohibitions in our basin plan? A high-level overview. And so, again, we're just trying to be really thoughtful, not to be crosswise, to be in alignment and supported by State Board in this effort. And this project is now really getting its feet under itself, and we're seeing tangible momentum on the actual drafting of what will become in the basin plan. So you can expect in the next year to be hearing more and more substantive information on this. Thank you, Catherine. Any other questions? Okay, well, great question, Greg. Yeah, it has been on the docket for a long time, and it's really exciting coming together, and I'm excited for the point in the next year where the board, you know, hears an information item on it, gets more information, gets to ask questions. We can, you know, hear in a board meeting setting from public that's interested in the issues. So really looking forward to that one advancing. So getting into permitting programs, many of these programs you'll see numbers. So, for example, in forest activities, we have this review and inspect 155 projects. I'll just note that these are included both. I think it's helpful to provide a little bit of context on kind of the volume of activities in these programs. They're also included because these are areas where we are required to set numeric targets and report on our progress to the State Water Board. And so there is linked on our website on this program priorities page, there's a link to the State Board's website page where they report out on all of the regional board's performance against these numeric targets. So they have a couple of functions, both, I think, just, you know, kind of expressing the scale of what's going on in these programs, and then also being something that that holds us accountable and gives us the opportunity to report to the public about our work and also reflect on how we did with our plans. So our forest activities program, as I just noted, this is led by Jonathan Warmerdam, Forrest Fortescue, and Jim Burke. And in this coming fiscal year, the plan is to review and inspect about 155 projects, you know, timber harvest plans and other types of forest activity projects. Implement the federal lands permit that this board adopted earlier in this fiscal year. Implement the statewide electrical utility order when the state board moves that forward. That's been a big statewide project that our staff have been involved with, and so we're standing at the ready to implement that permit when it's enacted. And then also another highlight is supporting wildfire emergency proclamation implementation. So Governor Newsom made an emergency proclamation that suspended certain environmental regulations for certain types of projects that help with wildfire resilience. And as part of that suspension, there's what's called an environmental protection plan that lays out things that those project proponents need to do to qualify for the suspension. So they don't need to apply for a permit, but they do need to carry out certain environmental protections. And so we were involved with helping to shape that environmental protection program, and will be available and involved in, you know, making sure that environmental protections are in place for projects under that emergency suspension. Our surface water protection program is led by Jonathan Warmerdam, Ryan Bay, and Gil Falcone. A major part of the work in that program is issuing 401 water quality certifications for work that is in waters of the U.S. and waste discharge requirements for in waters of the state that are not waters of the U.S. An emerging piece of work in that program is doing state jurisdictional determinations for waters that could be waters of the state but are no longer considered waters of the United States based on Supreme Court changes, a Supreme Court decision a couple years back. And so that's a new area of work that used to be supported by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in terms of jurisdictional determinations for waters of the U.S., and now that we're looking at these as waters of the state and not waters of the U.S., our staff are backfilling that function to make those determinations about the types of waters that will be impacted. This program is also supporting Klamath restoration, development of that Humboldt Bay wind port that I mentioned earlier,
In addition to forest activities, we'll also have a role in implementing that statewide electric utility order when that's adopted. Our cannabis program priorities are similar to last year, but have changed a little bit in ways that you have already heard about as a board. We continue to prioritize inspecting illegal sites, sites that are not permitted for cannabis cultivation. The thing that you have now heard quite a bit about is implementation of our new cannabis enforcement strategy, and really that driving the enforcement activities that are such a big part of our cannabis program. We also continue to provide compliance assistance, outreach and education, coordinate among multiple agencies, and we continue to pursue technology tools that can make that work more efficient and effective. More permitting programs. Our dairy program, led by David Kuzmar and Joshua Luters, focuses on education and outreach, compliance inspections of approximately one quarter of enrollees every year. So the goal is to get to all the dairies once every 4 years. Providing assistance with compliance with groundwater monitoring requirements that are part of the existing dairy waste discharge requirements. Really focusing on growing and strengthening our partnerships. One of the emerging issues, or it's been an issue for a long time, but an issue that's getting a lot of activity right now in those partnerships is working with partners on carcass disposal options, because those options are pretty limited in our region. And then providing funding support to the extent that we can help dairies link up with funding resources to help implement water quality improvements and other environmental improvements on their dairies. Vineyard program, you just heard a lot about this, led by David Kuzmar and Brenna Sullivan. So the plan this year is to begin working on third-party establishment and coalition establishment, continue with public outreach now that the order is adopted, and work on the framework for implementation, which includes things like forms, templates, database operations, all of the pieces that need to be available to those that need to comply with this order. Our Lily Bulb permit program, you will be hearing about this much more in October when we are up in Crescent City. Our staff continue with annual inspections at Lily Bulb Farms. Our staff are planning to generate a water quality monitoring report summarizing the results of water quality monitoring that our staff have conducted over the last several years. The results of that will be shared with the board at that October meeting. And then there's also a whole slew of activities associated with developing an order for lily bulb cultivation. And those efforts are led by David Kuzmar and Ben Zabinski. More permitting. County and rural roads. This is actually a new section on this program priorities page, because we have our new watershed assessment and recovery unit, WARU, that's working on the Wallala roads permit. And so that'll be a significant item coming before the board as a workshop in this fiscal year and for adoption in the following fiscal year. We also have our rural roads general order, which has already been adopted and is now being implemented. And then our five counties waiver, continuing to review and inspect projects under that waiver. So unit and its work is led by Devin Rabellino. And it's really exciting to bring all of those roads programs of the office together into one place. We have another thing that's new this year compared with last year is that our stormwater and wastewater NPDES programs have been split into two different units within the office. So all of that work used to take place under the leadership of Heaven Moore. We have, after years of wanting to do this, we were finally successful in peeling off wastewater into its own unit. So that's now led by Mona Doherty. On the stormwater side, our staff will be working to develop a revised Phase 1 Municipal Separate Storm Sewer System, or MS4, permit. They plan to conduct 27 inspections under the Construction General Stormwater Permit and 56 inspections under the Industrial Stormwater General Permit. Focus more on outreach, education, and compliance assistance. Really place a focus on timely issuance of inspection reports. And also work to develop an enforcement strategy specific to stormwater. The cannabis enforcement strategy, as you'll recall, was developed in response to the cannabis program being a pretty challenging program. And the stormwater program has its own unique challenges. And so our staff will be working on and sharing with the board an enforcement strategy specific to stormwater. NPDES wastewater. Here's some more performance targets. We plan to issue new permits for 6 wastewater facilities and also a new general order for minor municipal wastewater facilities. This has been in the works this fiscal year, but we hope to get it across the finish line in the next fiscal year. Also conduct 8 inspections at wastewater facilities, 1 sanitary sewer system inspection, and 1 pretreatment inspection. And then a priority of the wastewater program continues to be pursuing mandatory minimum penalties for certain water quality violations at wastewater systems that are subject to those mandatory minimum penalties. Oh boy, I think this must be the last permitting slide. Yes, after this, we're done with permitting. So we have, this is another, I think, new section on the website. We've been working on these efforts for a while with water recycling, but we now have more specialized staff resources to focus on water recycling. And so we've called it out as its own program, really promoting the use of recycled water in our region, providing technical assistance to facilities that are recycling or looking to recycle, prioritized permitting for facilities recycling, including 3 enrollments in the recycled water general order and conducting 5 inspections. And these efforts are led by Tina Lowe, who is planning to give a more detailed presentation about recycled water in the region at our August board meeting. Our waste discharge to land program is led by Dr. Kelsey Cody. It includes a focus on implementing the statewide winery general order that was adopted by state board but is implemented by the regions, continuing to support Russian River pathogen TMDL development, providing technical assistance to disadvantaged communities and tribes, compliance assistance, and then we have a variety of targets there for activities, numeric targets for activities in that program. Land disposal, a big focus is compliance assessment and enforcement, also managing growth at the Sonoma County Central Waste Disposal Site, which is the only waste disposal site in our region that is actively accepting new waste. This program is also focusing on file digitization and have a variety of numeric targets there for your perusal. I just have one more slide on other programs, but because permitting was a lot, I'll pause and see if anyone has any questions about permitting now, or we can come back to it. Okay, I'll bring it home with other programs, the things that don't fit into those other buckets. Our cleanups program is a program that, like our surface water protection 401 certification program, really accomplishes a huge volume of work that the board rarely sees because they're items that are dealt with at a staff level. So the cleanups program continues to focus on reducing their response time when they receive data about things like vapor intrusion. They continue to focus on brownfield redevelopment. They continue to issue annual letters to sites that are open and don't have a lot going on just to make sure that the owners or representatives of the sites understand their responsibilities at their cleanup site. Continued updates to GeoTracker, which is really important for public transparency so that the public can go on the web and find current information about contaminated sites in their neighborhood or their area of interest. They continue to work towards site closures and, importantly, I think largely in response to a public comment that came to this board a couple years back, really working concertedly with local governments to prevent housing development on contaminated plumes, which was something that we heard maybe happening unintentionally in our region. Enforcement, we've got more of those numeric performance targets. Within 18 months, we're expected to address 80% of Class A violations, bring those to formal enforcement, and then we're also expected to impose mandatory minimum penalties for 80% of the violations that carry mandatory minimum penalties. The program continues to work on updating enforcement priorities, working on complex long-term enforcement cases in addition to the ones that are described above in the performance metrics, coordinate complaint response for the entire office. So anytime a member of the public reaches out with a complaint about water quality issues, the enforcement program coordinates who in the office will respond to that. I know of interest to the board, they continue to pursue delinquent liabilities from actions that this board has adopted. And this year, our enforcement program is participating in US EPA's state review framework, which is a federal program that cycles through every several years. I think it's been 5 years to each state to review enforcement efforts, particularly related to Clean Water Act and NPDES enforcement. So we're up this year for that review. And then closing it out on grants and funding, this program, led by Carrie Ann Lopez, continues to cultivate new grant projects for all kinds of funding sources and tries to link up potential grantees with different funding sources for their water quality beneficial projects in the region, and then also a whole slew of administrative activities related to 319H grants and supporting the statewide process and also supporting applicants in our region to be successful in applying for those non-point source grant funds. So that's what I have. I'm very happy to answer any questions or hear any comments that you may have. I don't think we have any members of the public signed up to give comment, but happy to hear from them too if anyone logs on.
Well, I'll give you my comments. It's an awful lot of, it's a very ambitious list, and I have no doubt you and your staff will carry it out just fine in flying colors. Thank you for your presentation. It's a lot. Board members, any questions?
Not a question, but a follow-up to your comments, Chair Bedoya. What, you've been in this position 2 years?
Two and a half.
It's a lot to cover. And I mean, I hope people can appreciate the steepness of your learning curve in 2.5 years to come before this board and give almost 40-minute presentation, an overview of the activities. It's really impressive, and it shows that you've got a good working group behind you that are pulling together and getting you up to speed on all of these things. So it's a pat on the back to not only you but to everybody else, as I said, in the shadows that don't often come up here and talk to us. But it really is quite impressive.
Yeah, thank you for that, and we have an incredible team that are experts at what they do and have been very gracious with my learning curve over the last 2.5 years. Folks who have been doing what they do for 20, 30, 40 years and have been very gracious in educating me and bringing me along so that I can understand and support their programs and also represent them to the board. So thanks for acknowledging that.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to add my remarks. Just listening to the breadth of the work that is planned under these priorities, I still have what arrived with me at the beginning of my service in this board, and that is getting more resources to do this work. I understand the fiscal times that we live in. I understand the budget change, the BCP process, but I'm certainly interested in, now that the document is in front of us and now that all this work that's proposed is in front of us, then as we go through our year, then that we get reports back on what's been accomplished and where you've and where you as the executive officer find the lack of resources, you know, most telling. It's a great document. It's a huge volume of work. And as I said, I continue to be concerned about the resource question.
Thank you. I and many of our staff also continue to be concerned about resources. There's so much important work to be done, and we're careful and thoughtful with prioritizing our resources. But I think it's always worth acknowledging that there's more to do, and more resources to this region would only benefit water quality in the region.
Thank you, Valerie. Ryan? Okay. So that brings us to Executive Officer's Report. Valerie?
Thank you. And I will just do that from here. One thing I just wanted to remember to say is that we have a couple of pieces of new beautiful art on the walls of this room. And so I just wanted to share thanks to Carrie Ann Lopez of our staff, who actually provided those. And I've really been enjoying having those to look at during this meeting. And then second of all, on the written EO report, I wanted to highlight the update about work in the Wallala River watershed. And part of the reason I wanted to update at this point in the meeting, I don't know who's out there listening, but I wanted to highlight for the public that that article kind of previews a couple of different opportunities for public comment and engagement on projects in that watershed. So it's out there in writing, I think, actually in multiple ways to make the public aware of those opportunities. But just wanted to use my microphone now to remind anyone that's listening that there will be opportunities to engage in that watershed. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Board members' requests for future agenda items and other items of interest. Board members. I'd be interested, as I said earlier, to have I sent you an email regarding the possibility of having this fellow, Kenneth, and I forget his last name, give us a presentation. He's in charge of hatcheries from Northern California with Department of Fish and Wildlife, just so that we understand the breadth of the permits that we write for hatcheries.
I will reach out to our staff that are engaged in hatchery permitting and coordinate on the possibility of such an item.
I had called him to ask questions about the timing of fish releases and what the decision process that takes place is takes into account, and just to educate myself.
Thank you.
Okay. Our next meeting is Thursday, August 14th, 2025, 9 a.m. here in Santa Rosa, and Friday, August 15th at 9 a.m., 2025, also here in Santa Rosa. And with that, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.